Get Pucked.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Get Pucked podcast. Matt, Vito, and Dave here with you. And we are inching much closer to the start of that season, but already there is some pretty significant news in Habs land. Let's get you caught up real fast, and then we're going to talk about it. Number one, let's just get it out of the way because the man deserves our respect. Paul Byron hanging up the skates after 12 seasons. He is retiring officially. Immediately after the announcement of his retirement, the Habs also mentioned that he will have a position with player development, which I think is phenomenal. I think the guy is a class act. I think he gave everything he could possibly give to this organization while he was here for 8 years. And I ask you just your thoughts about him and perhaps your favorite memory, which I'm pretty confident will probably be the same for all three of us. But anyways, let's see what's up. Vito, go ahead.
This guy started off as a waiver claim and became a fan favorite immediately. Was able to capture the hearts of everyone, and his most memorable moment has to be the Stanley Cup final goal. I mean, the guy who took that picture should get money every single time somebody uses it. That's one of those pictures that, in my opinion, is quite iconic, just the way it's done, who it's against, what it meant as a goal. It's one of those pictures that you're always going to look and see. Like, if it was anybody else other than Paul Byron was a superstar, it'd be everywhere. Everyone would be talking about it. It's like with that Wayne Gretzky goal when he scored number 802, the Timo Solani ripping
the glove.
Only the picture, not the talent, because he's nowhere close to those people. And okay. Those players, but that the quality of that picture and the whole movement and all that is just, I love it. But
everybody heard it here first. Gretzky, Solani,
you guys, you know what I meant. It's just a very nice moment, and there was a lot of meaning behind it. It's one of the most memorable Habs goals in recent memory, and there's nothing more to say. The guy was a good guy and a good team player. He got the A on his jersey too. What more can you say? He's never been a problem in the room, as far as we know. Everybody's loved him, and now he gets hired, and he was with the Habs brass. So, why not?
Yeah, I figured as much, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, same great moment. Obviously, what made the moment epic too is like it was pandemic times, right? So like the arena was like black tarped off, and It was just like it's an eerie sense that you're never going to see ever again, probably in NHL history. Hopefully. Yeah. It was an incredible time. And just, I think anybody watching that game and watching that series, and it was just fantastic. Everything came together to make that moment. And Paul Byron, just his speed, the way he skates, the speed is just something that you have to admire. And, you know, he said it best in his retirement post or whatever, that he went from B hockey to assistant captain of the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, that's pretty cool. So, I mean, I think everything's been said possibly about Paul Byron you could do. I think a lot. He took a lot of people by surprise, too. He spoke French, when he came. Yep. I know a lot of the media wasn't expecting that. It's like, oh, look at this. The guy speaks French, too. He was a perfect Montreal Canadian. So kudos to him.
Does he still go down as the best waiver claim of all time for now?
He's got to be up there, man.
Yeah, sure.
He's got to be up there. To go from waiver claim to an 8-year stint with the team, I mean, obviously he had those points where they put him on waivers later on there, but he wasn't claimed. He stayed with the team 8 years, assistant captain. He wore the A. I mean, produced.
Well, they put him on the waivers more at the end when his injury was really starting.
Yeah. But I mean,
and at that point, there was already rumors swirling that he was hurt. So
yeah,
but I'll say that goal doesn't define his career, but it's like he was a hard worker and he really started from the bottom.
He was super fast. Everybody talked about Paul Byron and his speed. It was evident when he was out there. But that goal is the apex of his career. I mean, that should be in a gigantic custom painted version above the mantelpiece in the Byron residence. That was a phenomenal goal. I hope it is. And if it isn't, I hope he gets in touch with somebody after hearing it on the Get Puck podcast. And he should get that commissioned. So thank you, Paul Byron, for your service. He's obviously going to stick around in the organization. But another thing that happened organizationally was a trade. There was a trade done last night. So we finally have the last domino, I believe, of the Jeff Petrie second time around trade, where Casey DeSmith finds his way over in Vancouver for Tanner Pearson and a third round pick in 2025. Off the cuff, I think most people, well, I don't know, most people, in fact, from what I've been seeing, there's been quite a bit of like back and forth, whether this was, you know, another Kent Hughes masterclass or don't we have enough forwards already? This guy, isn't he super injury prone? What are we doing? Casey DeSmith could have maybe got something else, which hilarious. People think that, but whatever. So let's break that down, shall we? Let's look at the player. I mean, we're not even going to look at Casey DeSmith realistically. He was a Hab for 18 seconds. So they basically got Tanner Pearson in with a third. Now, I ask you this because I think this is another interesting point of this trade. I'd like to get your opinions on it. Was it the third round pick that was what Kent Hughes went after, or was it Tanner Pearson? What did he covet more in this particular trade for those two assets, Dave?
Oh, I think it's got to be the risk of taking a flyer on Tanner Pearson. I mean, the third round picks. I mean, whatever, man. You could just stack up your third round picks all the time. It's not guaranteed to be. It's not a terrible. There's nothing wrong with stacking picks, but like people who say, "Oh, masterclass, flipped it for a third or second round pick." Okay, I mean, I guess. I think taking a flyer on Tanner Pearson, this guy's a former first overall pick. He's a guy who put up, you know, I think 24 goals at his best. Obviously he's had that hand injury and he's in that, you know, kind of, there's an investigation around how it was handled by the Vancouver Canucks and the effect they'll have on his career long-term. Who knows what's going to happen, but it's another project that Kent Hughes is obviously becoming famous for, right? He's a guy who collects these types of projects and hopes that, you know, they work out. And I don't see anything wrong with it. It cost them absolutely nothing. I think nobody had Casey DeSmith really as a part of this team going forward. So it basically cost them virtually nothing to take a flyer on this guy other than maybe a roster spot for a younger guy and you know, trimming down the competition and the available spots. But other than that, I'm okay with it. I don't think I'm not blown away with it. I wouldn't call it a masterclass of anything. I think it's a team taking a flyer, expending themselves with an extra goalie, and you're taking a flyer on a guy who has some potential but is bogged down by injuries, which is a familiar theme.
Okay.
I think it was more for the third
round. Okay. All right. Interesting. Go. Tell me why.
I think it was more for the third round pick. When you look at the Montreal Canadiens, they've got 13 picks in the next 2 years with their first four rounds. And I think they're just, you know, it looks like when you look at the trend and all the picks that they're acquiring, especially for 2025, I kind of see it as that's maybe the time when they look and they say, okay, this is where we're done trying to stockpile prospects and whatever is around that 2025 mark. And at the same time, the picks are assets that can be moved to go and acquire more proven or more ready NHL players. But when you look at it, you can look at it in another angle too, is that the goalie market is not very strong and it doesn't have a whole lot of value out there. So when you look at Casey DeSmith being moved for Tanner Pearson, who's a former first round pick, and a third round pick, that he actually got pretty good return. The only thing about Tanner Pearson is that he did get hurt. He has been hurt. He did, you know, he's got a veteran leadership behind him. He's got some experience, so he could help with the kids. And Christian Dvorak's hurt, so they just didn't want to lose a vet when they're already thin in terms of veterans. So they went and add one in the time being because they don't know when Christian Dvorak is going to come back.
Especially they said the Dvorak thing came out that it looks like earliest is going to be November. I think the point that you bring up, though, is something that's not really spoken about too much, although Kent Hughes in his presser that was just about a half an hour ago from the time of this recording did mention he comes with two Stanley Cups and he kind of angled his sort of acquisition of Tanner Pearson in that regard. We wanted more veterans on the team. It's a very young team. A lot of people are upset now saying that, well, he's going to take the spot of a kid who might have deserved a shot up there. Tanner Pearson is going to play bottom 6 minutes. I think we all agree on that.
It all depends, right?
I don't see Tanner Pearson all of a sudden coming here with a wrist that is, I think we also just read, is only at 80% now after all the rehabbing. And apparently this injury is very, very hard to shake where it was specifically injured. Will he be completely just a body? I don't know about that. If he can come back and be the guy that he was in 2019, which is doubtful, but if he could, then this was great. You have him, expiring contract. He plays strong for the year. You flip him, you get more stuff. You probably maxed out a Casey DeSmith potential return when you got Pearson in a third. I think most people that were expecting more for DeSmith are a little bit off their rocker. I mean, bear in mind that he was just kind of.
I thought trade. if you just went with picks only, Casey DeSmith, yeah. Maybe a fifth and a seventh, something like that.
Just to get him out of there, exactly.
That's one. Pearson, I'm looking at more as a whole. I'm looking at the whole trade, everything. Montreal got a lot of assets to just be a third team in the mix. Okay, because I know we're looking at, Casey DeSmith got traded, but we acquired Casey DeSmith because we took on the Jeff Petrie contract initially. So when you look at the whole thing, it's like Hoffman and Pitlick got out and netted Lindstrom, a 2025 second, Nathan Legarre, a 2025 third, a 2025 conditional fourth round pick, and Tanner Pearson. I think, see it.
Yeah, trade-wise, asset-wise, I think everybody's got to give this double thumbs up. It was crazy what you were able to get for Rem Pitlick and Mike Hoffman, no doubt. But it doesn't change the fact that now that you got these guys, you got to look at what you got. Sure, the picks are nice. The picks are nice. It's collateral. You can trade. You always add these as little sweeteners to other things to make another trade happen. But finally, you got to look at who you have. They got rid of Mike Hoffman and Rem Pitlick from their actual roster, and they replaced them with Tanner Pearson.
Which they had no future for.
But now you have Tanner Pearson on the team now.
Yeah.
Now, could they put him on waivers? Absolutely. I don't suspect that they're going to, but you have him on the team. So now that you have him there, where does he slot in? Is he going to do anything to make the team better? Is this just a body as a stopgap? Is Kent Hughes hopeful that he's going to be able to find a little bit of spark and then trade him like he wanted to do with perhaps Monahan last year? Before he got hurt? Is that the game plan?
Yeah, like, I think that's exactly.
He's got a one-year contract. It's exactly. Go for it, Dave. Go.
You can't over... I think we're overanalyzing it a little bit, and I know that's what we do around here, but it's just like, look, he had an asset, a goaltender that wasn't going to play, and he traded him away, and he got an asset in return that is expires at the end of the year. Maybe you could flip him at the trade deadline if all works out well, and if not, it doesn't hurt the team. There's no downfall to what this move brings or anything other than if you really, really wanted that fourth line or third, like that winger spot, and you thought he really is stealing something away, a spot away from someone that deserves it more. But I'm not of that belief. So to me, look, it's a flyer. The guy took a flyer. It's a trade that you see a million times in the NHL. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. It's a good move from Ken Hughes' perspective, and that's that. I think that that's it, and I think that, you know, it's not a genius move by anything. It's not like chess while everyone's playing checkers. It's a move. It's a move, and he got
here. But does it hurt the team? I think the bigger question is a lot of people are asking that. Like, you bring in this guy who is injury prone, who hasn't played a full season in three-plus years.
Okay.
Is he taking the spot of somebody who should have been there?
If he's so injury prone, and that's the one thing you got on this guy, that spot's going to be filled by whoever deserved it anyway. Is it not? He's going to be injured.
And on top of that, if he is injury prone,
that concern's gone.
He's going to go on LTIR till the end of the year, and he's off the books anyway. If he gets hurt again, and when you think of it, who's he taking a spot away from? Yolonen? Pezzetta? So what? So what?
I'm not necessarily throwing my hat into one camp or another saying I agree that he's taking a spot or not. But fact remains that this guy is now an NHL contracted player who's on the team, who wasn't there a day ago when we all were doing our different projections on who should be in the top 12. And now he's there, which means somebody's got to drop. Somebody now isn't. Now you're right. Is Pezzetta the guy? Is Armia going to be traded or put on waivers?
No, it's going to be Pezzetta. Assuming the Montreal, because right now they have 23 players, okay, with Dvorak being on LTIR, okay? Assuming that that's the case, you're looking at Pezzetta, that's probably the guy that goes down, or will rotate with probably Armia if he's having a bad stretch or a bad start and whatever the case may be there. But it's like, I know some people are going to say, oh, yeah, but what about Joshua Roy? What about Owen Beck? Those guys haven't proven that they can play in the NHL just yet. Doesn't mean they won't. And if they get to Laval and they start performing and doing really well, they're going to find space. They're going to make space for them. Be it somebody's going to get hurt, because it always seems to be the case, or they're going to make a move or put somebody down on waivers to open up a spot for one of those guys. But right now, today, we cannot walk into the season and say Joshua Roy is a lock for the third or fourth line. Owen Beck is a lock for a 3C role. None of those guys are locks. They're your lock for Laval. Go in Laval, prove yourselves, do what you got to do, and make sure you try to get some like Tanner Pearson out of the roster so that you can play. You know, Yolonen is the only one that you can look and say he played in the NHL last year. He showed he had a deceptive shot. He showed some things that he belongs in the NHL to a certain degree. I don't know, on a night-to-night basis, but he's the only one that's really getting hurt from Tanner Pearson being there.
So is this perhaps then, you thinking about it from the other way, that yes, they brought in this vet to purposefully take up a spot, to not have to bring a kid up who is, you're suggesting, not ready, and to look out of and to lose the confidence. So that's perhaps the reason?
There's no reason to rush them. And at the same time, I see it also as you were losing a vet in Christian Dvorak, okay? He happened to be somebody that you were like, okay, is he going to play 3C this year? Is Sean Monahan going to play up? Now Sean Monahan, you could literally say he's your 3C. He's locking in. He's going to be your 3C to start the season. Put Tanner Pearson probably on his left because, like you said, he's going to play on the bottom six role and just let it go. And if there's somebody coming out of camp who really stands out and is a forward, and we had them cemented as a Laval Rocket top six player or whatever the case may be there, then they'll make space for him. But right now, we cannot go into the camp or going into the season thinking that right away, okay, Joshua Roy is the guy to lock in.
I know you've been talking a lot, Joshua Roy, but I do have this because I am doing projections of the lineup now that we have Tanner Pearson on the team. Dave, how do you feel about a third line that consists of Tanner Pearson, Sean Monahan, and Brendan Gallagher? And is there something we can come up with about the injuries that have occurred to that line, and we can
do
the
totality
of man games lost?
They got no hands. That whole line has no hands.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's a rough – if that's the third line you're going with, I mean, that's you're hoping and praying that everything works out. But, hey, maybe that's the case. Look, I mean, it's just – it's okay. Like, I just think that, like, the people who deserve the spots are going to find a way to earn them, and that's that. You know, there's no one that's going to be held back from this. Maybe somebody – they won't get the shot they would have got, that, but who cares? They'll get it eventually if they keep playing well in Laval, if they keep going. Like, I just think people overreact to these certain things. It's kind of, and I understand it, because you kind of look at this roster and you're like, man, another forward? Like, what are they doing? But at the end of the day,
that's the knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that it's not 100% harmful. It's not, it has a chance to work out in the favor, and a chance come March or wherever the hell the trade deadline is, that we come back and say, oh, that was a good move. He actually picked up an asset for him. Or, oh, okay, it didn't work out. Oh, well. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, it's a proof that this management team is willing to take flyers on guys. And it's not a home run swing, but they're willing to try. You know, Sean Monahan, Kirby Dog, Newhook, whatever the case may be, they're taking chances on these guys, on these projects, and hoping they fit in with their system. And I don't think that there's any real harm done in it, because the players who are technically affected or whatnot, they'll find their way to the roster.
So the worst case scenario is it's negligible in terms of affecting the team in a bad way, but mm-hmm. on the upside, it can actually be very beneficial by having veteran leadership, a proven winner, two-time Stanley Cup guy, older guy, and then maybe plays well and they can flip him later on.
You put one very in there too much. It's beneficial. I wouldn't say it's very beneficial, but it's beneficial.
All right, beneficial. Sure. Okay.
They basically got three projects, four if you want to throw in Newhook for some people, but you got Monahan, you got Pearson, you got Lias Anderson. Don't forget that one. He's there too, that they basically got him, and they got Newhook that we're still there's question marks. So it seems like we're going into every season with question marks at certain players. I think Newhook's going to do great with Montreal, but yeah. You know,
but Anderson's not a lock for this roster, right? Like
it's still a project.
Yeah, I guess in the future, I guess. Sure.
Yeah, they're still taking a flyer on him. You know, there's some history there with Jeff Gordon and Lias Anderson, and it's another former first round pick player. So, to your point, yeah, they'd like to take flyers on guys. I just there's like that third line; they're all held up by nuts and bolts. It's all metal. Gallagher's hands busted. Tanner Pearson's hands busted. Sean Monahan's hip is busted. It's all nuts and bolts keeping that line together, if in fact that's the line. Matt, we don't hear you.
Yeah, we have lost.
Oh, sorry, guys.
There you go.
So at that point then, I guess, is it worthwhile to also discuss, like you were just mentioning there, so, and I think it's funny that you keep saying that Tanner Pearson, you're saying, oh, they got another former first round pick. I mean, that is many, many years removed. When you talk about a new hook, or you talk about Kirby Dach, that's not that long ago. So saying that they got a former first round, even Lias Anderson, you can still kind of play that game. I think Tanner Pearson at this stage, we're not going to really be like, oh, he got a former first round pick and a third.
It just means that the potential was there at one point, right? There was a potential for more, and he never lived up to his potential. That to me is what a former first round pick means.
Well, I mean, he was doing well for a while until he got hurt, right? I mean, for a while, like you saw, he got he was basically a 40 point producer, 20 something goals. Yeah, sure. I mean, he was 30th overall. That's not bad for a guy who was drafted 30th overall. Basically, at that time when he was drafted, he was a last pick of the first round.
He's only hit 20 goals twice, though. I mean, like, I wouldn't say that he's like, you know, he was a can't miss prospect, but he was a first overall pick. So that to me, that's all that means is that
first round.
What did I say?
First overall.
Yeah, I don't know why I say that.
No. As a first overall, he'd be a bust.
Not first overall, first round, obviously.
Not Nail Yakupov bust, but a bust.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, I mean, now that we're looking at it, I guess the last question that is to be discussed is, given the fact that they still, if you consider some of the younger guys as better odds than not of being on the team, will there be more trades coming before the start of the season? Okay.
Yes.
Who and when?
Well, who and when? I think there's going to be more moves, obviously, between waivers and whatever, but more trades. I can't tell you who's going to move out. I don't know, because I didn't even expect the Tanner Pearson acquisition. You know, I expected the Casey DeSmith trade and all that, but I didn't expect that to be the return. So from now until October 10th, I expect the Montreal Canadiens and Kent Hughes to make more moves. I just don't know who they're going to move. I would say a defenseman, probably. I still think that they got to find a way to move Chris Weidman for future considerations and things like that. They got to figure out what to do, because they actually have, not only do they have too many forwards, but they've got too many defensemen as well.
Yeah. It doesn't often happen. Like the teams that right now, I mean, they're full. They all have these massive rosters, training camp rosters, and they have, and barring injury, I mean, it's going to be hard to move some of these guys. And it's not as if you're moving guys who are like, wow, we really need Yoel Armia on our roster. Like, there's going to be multiple teams calling you, right? Like, it's going to be hard to swing a deal pending another team, you know, missing a huge piece because of an injury or something happening like that. I think it's going to be hard. I think defenseman is probably your best bet. You're right, Vito. I think that you might be able to move, you know, like Chris Weidman. Like, what's Chris Weidman going to do this year? You know what I mean? Like,
that's why I said for future consideration. I can tell you this. The Edmonton Oilers right now just announced that Ekholm won't be there to start the season.
See, so that's interesting. But then there must have other options, you know? Like, is that do you
have? Oh,
like they're not rushing to Chris. They're not calling.
We need Chris Weidman.
What is it going to take?
They're not rushing, but a lot of teams at that point don't want to pay too much for a player, and typically move everybody up, and they'll just say, okay, who can I have to have a body in the meantime until my player could come back in about a month from now? So somebody like Chris Weidman can be a stopgap on a, you know, as your sixth, seventh defenseman while everybody else moves up, just so that they don't lose ground. If the NHL has changed in a way where the first few games of the season, while people just tend to scoff at it and be like, it's nothing, those are some points that at the end of the day, you want to accumulate as much as you possibly can, because teams go through cold stretches, as we all know, and those points at the beginning are crucial. I can't remember which season it was, but Montreal basically started off strong like they typically do, faded away, came back strong again, and faded away in the end, but just squeezed into the playoffs. Like, we've seen that before. And and everybody now talks about, we just need to get into the playoffs and then see what happens. So there's so many teams and old school general managers that believe in that they may take a flyer on somebody like a Chris Weidman, or maybe they'll pony up more for something else just to not lose ground right off the bat. It's so tight, the league, that and every point matters.
I think that's perfectly said. I mean, ultimately, it's you got to, like, realistically, the way it works is, and I think this made the most sense when they were talking about the whole DeSmit thing, like the goalie market, you got to wait a little bit as you get closer to the start of the season because people get hurt and then you got to find someone to trade. So that's kind of sort of the same sentiment I feel about other guys. There are certain contract players like we would all love at this point, I think. All due respect to him, of course, there, but Yoel Armia, if somebody somewhere could take this guy off the Canadiens' hands for literally anything except an NHL contract back, that would be crazy good. Like, that would be a little bit of...
Oh, that would be a success. We've said it.
That would be a monster success.
If somehow he was able to move Yoel Armia and not retain salary, you literally could just put that Kent Hughes had the most successful offseason to date.
It is one of the most unlikeliest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
It's not happening. That contract was a bad contract to give out back then by the Bergevin. Yeah.
It's and you know what's
I understand why he did it at that moment in that day, but it was one of those that when he was playing for
the national team there in whatever it was, the World Cup, was it the World Cup or the Olympics? I don't even remember when he had that monster, like everybody was like, oh my God, this guy's tearing it up when he really
it was
wants
the World Championship. Play. Yeah.
It was the World Championships. That was it. So like, if we could see that,
yeah, but
you know what I mean?
We've that seen would it before.
Be
like,
oh, that'd be great. Yeah. But
it's a small sample. Well, that's there you go. Then that's the issue, right? We see it in small sample size. So his game lends to a World Championship run where he plays, you know, amazing out of the spotlight for a few games, you know, Yoel Armia was two goals here, two goals there. Inconsistent, and
it's too bad. It's too bad. I mean, obviously, I think the contract. I think any way, shape, or form, you look back on it, it was a bad contract, clearly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if he can just be a little bit more consistent, it wouldn't be such a glaring, issue that we see on the fourth line. And it's just, you know, he would be perfect. Obviously, it'd be the hardest one to get rid of. But I gotta think also, even though with the Dvorak news that came out today that he's going to start on IR, and so that changes a little bit of the complexities of the cap management, which we were reading about the other day, which more or less stated that just by sheer virtue of Price's contract going on LTIR and how the sort of cap is today, Kent Hughes would be forced to do more moves to make the cap sort of make sense and be under the allotted number that he was supposed to be at. That has since changed with the news of Dvorak. So now there's not such a pressing issue to trade people. There was no issue to begin with. Well, there was.
Not really. They were already talking about even with putting Price on in-season LTIR was still possible even before the Dvorak.
It was a lot more challenging than it is now with Dvorak's 4.5 going on now. Which, like for people that are way smarter than me when it comes to this stuff, and I've been diving deep into all the tweets that they've been posting about that, the very notion that the Dvorak's contract is now on LTIR has really like loosened the collar of Kent Hughes a bit. He would have been forced to do something to make it all compliant, otherwise throw a bunch of people on waivers that he might not have wanted to. Now he has the luxury of not having to do that. Although he still should do it.
Well, he's still going to have to a certain degree. It all depends how many roster players he's planning to keep, because he has to maintain the 23-man roster compliancy there. He has to be compliant. So he can't keep everybody. And right now, as it stands, with all the players that we have predicted and are projecting to be there on opening night, he's already at 23 players. And that's with Primo being sent through waivers.
Which I think, you know, is clear that he's going to be. Because otherwise, who is it? Do you think Primo out of camp rocks the world and now all of a sudden we have a goalie situation where...
I can tell you this about Primo is that if he does rock the world, as you say, and he performs well in camp, it won't be long before he has one of those games where you're just like, this guy's not NHL ready.
Yeah, but how long is that going to happen for? I mean, we're kind of timing out here of where we wanted to end the episode, but not to go too deep. But how much longer do you give Caden Primo?
You don't give him. I know goalies take longer to develop, but he hasn't shown that he can be the guy or even an NHL guy on an every night basis. I don't know if Dave agrees to that. I know Dave has said his comments about Primo in the past, but we want to know.
I don't see him as the future of the Montreal Canadiens in terms of goaltender of the future. Can that change? Maybe, but I just haven't seen enough of him to say that it has. In my opinion of him, watching him, to talking to people around the team, to talking to people who, you know, in the know, I just don't think he's the guy. Goalies do take longer to develop. That's absolutely true. The best example of that is like Ryan Miller, right? Who was like forgotten for a long time, and then he came back and you know, he developed, I think, at 26 or something, right? When Ryan Miller started going on his. So I think like definitely they take time, but at the end of the day, I think you have to kind of see something there. And to me, I just don't think that's it. I mean, could he have an excellent season here or there? Yes, but I don't think he's the future of the Canadiens, and I don't think he'll have an epic. Every time he's been called up, it hasn't really worked out.
Yeah, no. I mean, let's also give him a little bit of leniency to the times that he were called up. I mean, you know,
not the best situation.
So that aside, the last little thing, because I did want to mention this, there are 72 players coming to camp. How do you boys feel about that?
Whatever, bring them all.
It is whatever, isn't it? People are making a big deal about this. Who cares? Let it be 172.
Exactly. You pretty much know how it's going to be, you know, shrunk down to. We know the guys who are going to be there at the end. Why not see if there's happens to be somebody that blows everybody away and that was would have been under the radar. Bring them all and cut them all as you see.
There's always one, and you know what? I think like William Trudeau is going to end up surprising quite a few people.
William Trudeau, did he marry into your family? Like, what's up with William?
Always. He's the leader of the fan club. Send all of your fan mail to Vito. He'll make sure that William gets it.
I was also going to say Emil Heinemann, but we'll see what happens there. But to Dave's point, that 72 players. Yeah, like, who cares? We could pretty much guarantee that 21 of them are not going anywhere. They've made the team. Heck, even 22 have made the team. There's like one spot, really. When you think of it, there's one spot.
Nope. It's it's just funny to see that people are starved for hockey content and for the start of the season. It's just fun to see everybody up in arms, either defending like tooth and nail or just being so upset about some of the more sillier aspects of the just on the cusp of the season starting. So needless to say, 72 players come to camp. Everybody pump the brakes. It doesn't matter. It's going to get weeded out very quickly. And then, you know, who knows? Maybe like Dave was saying, there's somebody who just shines super bright and was unexpected. And if you only invited 32 people, he might not have been there, and then you would have never known. So let them all come. Let them all get cut, as Dave said, and we'll see what happens there. what I do want to pose is a question. For our little question to take away, which we'd love to see you guys write in the comments, if you can, give us your take about the Tanner Pearson sort of acquisition. What do you think about it? Is it what we were sort of suggesting, that like on the low end, it's negligible, it can't really hurt, but on the high end, this could be just another really good thing to happen for the team where he'll get unloaded for something else in the future. So it's just the gift that keeps on giving. Tell us what you feel about that. Give us maybe your projected lineups too. Do you see the man? We got to come up with a good name for that third line. Do you see the line of Pearson, Monahan, and Gallagher being something that can actually happen?
Line. It's the nuts and bolts line.
Nuts and bolts line. Well, not bad, not bad. So let us know. Let us know in the comments, be it on the video here or on X or wherever you like to post. And of course, we always throw it in at the end. If you haven't already, please consider like, subscribing, all that kind of stuff. We appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time if you made it all the way to the end here at 34 minutes in. So without further ado, I think that brings us to a close, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the time. Everybody, thanks for listening. And for Vito and Dave, I'm Matt, and this was Get Pucked.